Hello. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, there you are.
I wasn't prepared.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the way of this show here, even though we're starting 2 hours fucking later than we should, because somebody was at Hooters. But yeah, that's how things roll.
It's a long time at Hooters.
I haven't seen my friend in a while, and she wanted to get together, and she, you know, wants to talk. You know, women are, and blah, 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 blah.
I feel like you were probably the one that did most of the talking.
No, actually, not at all.
I'm a
very good listener, believe it or not. I'm a very, very empathetic person.
Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't talking about empathy. I was talking about long speaking rants that can go on.
I was also high and drinking wine. I had two glasses of wine.
Okay.
So that kept me accurate. That kept me accurate.
What kind of wine?
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Interesting. At Hooters. They're known for their wine list.
Yeah, you know, when look, especially when you're at Hooters with a chick and she orders a Miller Lite and you order the Cabernet Sauvignon and they bring it to the table, and without fail every single fucking time they put the beer in front of me and I have to look at them and be like, yep, no, I feel the shame of the fact that I'm the man with the wine and she's with the beer.
Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Mike. Thank you for joining us. Are you in a car right now?
I am in a car for about the next 5 minutes or so, and then I'll get out of the car, walk up the steps, get into the house, and then no one will know the difference.
Interesting. Okay. I can hear the car, the door. I can hear the whole thing over there, the blinker going.
Yeah, the window was down. I don't have any air conditioning, so I have the windows down.
Still, huh?
Oh, that'll be like that for years, I bet. I bet I don't have air until I get a new car.
You haven't even looked into getting it fixed?
No.
Interesting.
It's one of those things where I'm like, I don't have the money, and so what's the point?
Fair enough. This past weekend, we had UFC Hamburg in Germany. My computer is frozen again.
This is a crack operation.
It's loading. We had Shogun versus Anthony Smith in the main event. I do recall that. Anthony Smith won by knockout in the first round. Blitzed Shogun early. Landed some good shots. Won by knockout up against the side of the cage. And Shogun was out cold and face planted. I do remember that.
Like, I know that the sport evolves, and, you know, technically it evolves. Guys learn new techniques and better skills and blah, 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 blah. And then as there's more money involved in the sport, we see better and better athletes. We see, you know, the John Jones types. You go, oh, shit, like, this guy could be a good athlete at anything. But then, like, I see fights like this, and it's like, what's going on? Because Anthony Smith was so much physically bigger than Shogun. And this is a dude that fought at 185 last time out. And now he's at 205, and he was just so much bigger and younger and healthier and better shape. So much so that I'm watching this thinking, is this even allowed? Shogun can't do this. This is awful.
It's interesting because now Anthony Smith in a two-month window has two wins at 205 over two former champs and Rashad Evans and Shogun. But it's like anybody who's been watching MMA the last 5-6 years knows that Rashad and Shogun are both washed up. Do you think Anthony Smith's really good, or he's just fighting these guys at the right time?
Oh, it's 90% the latter. Shogun was actually on a bit of a run there. Like, he kind of had a career renaissance. I know we'd kind of joked in a bit of awe in the past at the idea that he was still in, like, the top 10, if not top 5 of light heavyweight. So this, like, it's a real win, I guess. But I don't know. It's light heavyweight, and there's no sex appeal to the division. Like, honestly, it's either this way, Corey Anderson or some shit. Fuck that.
In the co-main, you did have Corey Anderson defeating Glover Teixeira. Unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards. Anderson was able to get takedowns, get on top, and kind of just grind out the win. Not an exciting fight, but definitely the biggest win of his career as well.
It was kind of one of those fights where you almost don't expect to see a guy win a fight basically through only get on take down and get on top and not do a lot. It's like very, very old school to be that boring. But Corey Anderson made it happen, and we were all the worse for it.
From this point to the second fight on the show, all decisions. This was not an exciting show in general. There's not a lot of name value on this card either. I'm going to run through the fights. You stop me if there's anything you would like to share. Abu Azater defeated Vitor Miranda. Marcin Tybura defeated Stefan Struve.
That was something like, did he win by decision?
Yes, unanimous decision. Yep.
Yeah, he just kind of got on top and beat him up. And I have a very distinct impression of, I believe, either the announcers or possibly you saying, why is he so bad at using his reach?
I mean, Stefan Struve is like still only like 30 years old or something. He's like by far the youngest guy in the heavyweight division when everybody's almost 40. But it's like he is so washed up, man. Yeah, he's 30. He was born in 1988. And it's like,
holy shit.
He debuted in the UFC in 2009. And is just on this run where he's gone 3-5 in his last 8.
He's almost kind of a cautionary tale in that he's had this somewhat long career. And he's been in the UFC at a somewhat high level for a long time, probably too long and probably too early. But due to his size, they rushed him in there because everybody likes to see a freak. And that's what you are, Stefan Struve. You're a freak.
He's 3 straight losses now. Alexander Volkov, Andrei Arlovsky, and Marcin Tybura. Not great.
However, because he weighs over 205 pounds, he's only like 1 win away from a title shot.
True. And based on the heavyweight division, he's still got another good 10 years ahead of him.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, easily. Oh, unless he dies of giganticism, which happens to big people.
It can. Danny Roberts defeated David Zawada. Nasrat Haqparast defeated Mark Diakisi.
A very impressive win. Everybody was very, very interested. I saw a lot of chatter about Nasrat Pakistan and his victory here.
On the prelims, we had Damir Hadzevic.
I want to apologize for the Pakistan joke just now. I know it was kind of funny in my head, and I actually think it was kind of funny overall. But I can appreciate why somebody might think that was a racist remark. So I apologize for calling Nasrat Pakistan. I call him Pakistan. But, you know. Look, it's Trump's America. Fuck you. You're not allowed in here anymore.
That might not be racist, even. It might be nationalist. I don't know.
If I can't be nationalistic, what's the point of even having countries?
Damir Hadzevic defeated Nick Hine. Bartosz Fabinski defeated Emil Weber Meek. Nads.
That sounds like the name of a duck. Emil Weber Meek. That's what you would name a duck.
A guy named Mad Narimani defeated Khalid Taha. Do you think when they like Nad's fans chant like "Go Nad" when he's in the cage?
we're gonna be here all week, people here at halfguarded.com. Oh yeah.
Alexander Rakic defeated Justin Ledet by unanimous decision. 30-25, 30-24, 30-24. This is Ledet's first fight at light heavyweight, but this dude Rakic here looked really good, just smoked him everywhere on the feet, on the ground, kicked his ass. The highlight of the show, how many locks are on your doors?
Quite a few, actually.
You're one of those white people who are scared of people breaking into their house, aren't you?
Well, I live in a very blue state where we don't have guns, so I have to have locks instead.
Well, if no one has guns, what are you scared of?
Oh, no. The blacks have guns.
Oh, okay. Manny Bermudez defeated Davey Gray. What is that?
I may have been opening the Oreos that I put in the freezer.
You put Oreos in the freezer?
Yep.
Why?
Well, my ex-wife's mother did that, and I like the way it tasted. Hey, doggo. Also, if I have them in the freezer, I won't eat as many because they're in the freezer, so I have to walk upstairs and get the food out, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's a good way. Hi, doggy. Hi. I got a dog going crazy here. All right.
The craziest part of the show is Manny Bermudez's win over Davy Grant. He got a triangle choke in 59 seconds. He hit him with a good shot, got on top, mounted him, and like worked the triangle from the top. It was a cool finish. Darko Stokic defeated Jeremy Kimball, and Liu Pingwan defeated Damian Stasiak.
Brother.
Yes, yes.
Did he punch him in the heart?
I'm not sure. It was a unanimous decision. He may have. That might have got him the 29-28 win. Danny Roberts versus David Zawada was fight of the night, and Anthony Smith and Manny Bermudez got performance of the night bonuses, and that was UFC Hamburg. Last night we had Dana White's Contender Series. I believe this is week number 6. The one thing to note here was this was Nick Newell's debut with the promotion. He's the amputee guy who's missing, you know, part of his wrist, part of his arm. Yeah. But you got to hand it to Alex Munoz here. He beat him by unanimous decision.
You dick. Yeah, we got to really hand it to him there. I mean, this is great. This is how you know we are in Trump's America, man. You know you're in Trump's America when the end of Karate Kid is the bad guy's winning. Like this one, you know, the one-armed guy that tried really hard and turned his life around, and he found his calling as a mixed martial artist, and Dana White finally gave him a shot, and he lost. He just got his ass beat.
Yeah, I didn't see the fight, but it was like I want to say there was a ton of build for this, but like there was like a feel-good story here. This guy was finally going to get a shot, and people thought maybe he was good enough just to be in the UFC and didn't even need to go through the Contender Series. He was 17-1 or whatever. His only loss was to Justin Gaethje. And people are like, oh, this is a waste of him. And then he just gets smoked and loses every round. It's baffling.
I was actually surprised to hear about this result just because he has only really had the one big loss here to Gaethje. And otherwise, he's looked pretty impressive as a fighter.
Right.
Yeah, and so I actually expected him to win. Mm. And so the fact that he lost really just hammers home how incompetent and useless the handicap are.
Or I wonder, why did they book him against somebody he could be? I don't want to say could be, like, rig it for him. But, like, if you're going to put him on the show, you're presuming they want him to win and get into the UFC. It was just weird. Weird matchmaking, I guess. Maybe the Munoz guy just had a good night. Newell had an off night, but I don't see him giving him another shot. Maybe he goes to Bellator or something, but I can't imagine how he gets a fight in the UFC now.
Yeah, he'll get another fight. He has a name, and they got to fill so many fucking hours. Mm. He probably shouldn't get another fight if they want to keep the – why it's impressive to be in Dana White's Tuesday Night Fight Contender Series. But it's okay. And they got Greg Hardy next week.
I guess that's it. Some guy, Mike Davis, Ariel Helwani, said he was supposed to be the next John Jones. He lost by unanimous decision as well.
That was great. He was so cocksure. He's like, oh, yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy. This is the guy. Then he loses right away. It's like, oh, Ariel doesn't know anything.
Yeah, unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards. Yeah, a show that was actually pretty good last week. I mean, it's a week old now, this news, but I just can't help myself, was the PFL card. There was some screwy finishes and weird stuff going on there, per usual with PFL. I think they had another Phantom Tap this week. That's 2 weeks in a row they've had one of those.
Yeah, there was some sort of Phantom Tap there. To the point where, like, even like the guy whoever was that won is like, yeah, you know, I didn't really want to win this way, but you know, it should happen.
Yeah, let me. I'm loading here. Steven Seiler. It was a Steven Seiler fight, I think.
Yeah, and he had a guillotine, and they kind of rolled, and it looks like the guy may have tapped, but he didn't tap. But nonetheless, everybody was like, yeah, it looked kind of like he tapped. He's like, no, I swear I didn't tap. And Siler's like, I don't think he tapped, but I'm going to take all this money I get because I'm on my way to winning myself $1 million this New Year's Eve as I go to decision as one of 7 fights to go to decision.
Yeah, it was a fight, Steven Seiler and Alexander Almeida. It was Big Dan Mergliotta ended the fight, but there was no tap. The guy wasn't out. I'm not really sure what happened there, but Mirgliotta thought he saw something that he didn't. So Seiler and Palmer are the top seeds in the featherweight division for this PFL deal.
I think that we all had them as our number one and number two in our brackets. So, yeah, makes
sense. Then another guy, Felipe Lins, defeated Alex Nicholson in a heavyweight fight. It was a good brawl. Lins got rocked early, came back and knocked Nicholson out. This thing's really dragging ass. I think that's it. There's something else good on that show too. It was just a fun show. There were good fights, and if you didn't see it, you should.
Yeah, especially you got to whet your appetite for that welterweight tournament coming up with John Fitch. Yeah, you got to really make sure you get into the PFL spirit.
I think that isn't that Bellator.
That is Bellator. I realize that as I said it out loud, but you know, six and one half dozen of the other.
You're so ignorant.
I have heard that a lot
today. Okay. There's some controversy in the UFC's welterweight division.
Yeah.
Well, they've kind of announced a new main event for UFC 228. Originally, I think last week we were talking about the Valentina Shevchenko Nico Montano main event.
Which we were all, I think we both agreed was a fantastic pay-per-view main event.
I agree. But they've decided that fight needs a co-main event, and they have...
No!
Yeah. Well, they're loading these pay-per-views up now. So
I mean, it's just yet another example of the UFC just burning through too many marketable main events on one show.
Hey, you got to give the people their money's worth. I appreciate it. So it looks as if it's going to be Tyron Woodley defeating against Darren Till, who missed weight by 4 pounds and barely won a decision over.
My gosh, that's a main event in any arena in the country.
Barely won his last fight. A lot of people thought he lost that fight to Stephen Thompson. But that's the direction they're going. The reason this is a little confusing is about a month ago, they had an interim welterweight title fight with Colby Covington and Rafael Dos Anjos, which Colby Covington won. So now they're going to strip Colby Covington of his interim title, and the winner of Till Woodley will be the real champ, even though Woodley already is the real champ.
I guess I'll always remember where I was when the UFC's welterweight championship didn't mean as much anymore. I mean, when that interim welterweight title lost all of its prestige, that was a rough day. But hey, Colby had his month. I mean, Colby Covington, if he was a teenage girl, would not know what it's like to have a period twice. So that's something.
I don't understand how, like, if Woodley can defend the title in September, why didn't Covington just fight him in September when he just fought in June?
I'm beginning to think that maybe the UFC doesn't take their titles all that seriously. I'm thinking that perhaps they are willing to just create and invent championships and have no intention of ever, recognizing them. And then in 3 years, it won't matter because this company's fucking stupid.
Well, Covington is saying he can fight in November. He just had that, like, some kind of nasal cavity surgery or something. So he needs like a month or something to recover from that. And he's claiming he can go in November. What a mess.
Does anyone even give a shit?
No, well, I'm just saying it's indicative of where they're at and their matchmaking and the direction they're going. It's not a good way to promote. But you look at like UFC 228 in the timeline, that show's scheduled for September 8th. Every other title's tied up, either between now and then or somebody's hurt. There's no heavyweight title fight. There's no light heavyweight title fight. Whitaker's out at middleweight. He's injured. 155 is a mess. We don't know what's going on with Conor or Khabib or Tony Ferguson. That's a shit show. 145, Max Holloway's having strokes due to weight cuts. We don't know what's going on there. 135, we have a title fight coming up with Dillashaw and the tattoo guy. And then we've got DJ versus the Mexican wrestler. So it's like all the title fights. And then the women's division, there's no one for the 145-pound champ to fight. At 135, I'm trying to do this off the top of my head.
Nobody.
Nobody at one. Oh, yeah. Nunes is supposed to fight Cyborg maybe someday. 125 is already on this show. And 115, I don't know what Rose is doing. Rose isn't scheduled for anything, but
although she did defend her title a couple
months ago. Yeah, I'm just saying there's no other real title fight to put on this show. Like, I'm surprised they're not trying to get like Nate to fight on this card or something. Because Nate would draw better than Woodley versus Darren Till.
Yeah, but he may not be as profitable as they are.
Why? Because he's going to be paid more?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I would be willing to bet that's what it comes down to. Is it what is Darren Till and Tyrone Woodley going to set the company back? $500,000 at most for that fight? Like, Darren Till gets, I don't know, $75 a bus ticket and some peanuts. Tyron Woodley gets just a little bit more because I don't want to look racist. But otherwise, nobody's going to give a shit about this fight. This is pathetic. This company is fucking, it's so done. I don't care because I've given up paying for this stuff. I've given up even giving a fuck. Like, I go to shows only if they're in my own hometown. And I think to myself, it is a privilege to go sit there cage side and it's only a 25-minute drive. Otherwise, they're stupid. They don't know what they're doing. They don't care. The smartest fucking human beings on the planet are the Vertita brothers. And anytime anybody tells you that we should not have, that we need higher taxes, that rich people don't earn their money, and blah, blah, blah. No, fuck you. The people like the Vertitas show you, no, there are people with money who are stupid, and there are people with money that are smart. We should give our money to the smart people. Because those criminal banks, those gangster motherfuckers, they got out just in time. Genius.
Thoughts on Till versus Woodley as an actual fight?
I don't know. Any Tyrone Woodley fight, my instincts immediately say, well, that's going to be boring. Till will come forward and Woodley will probably try to circle and tie up. And I could see it being, boy, I could see, actually, this could be ugly. That thing could get real ugly because Tyrone Woodley is he's a black African-American wrestler. And Tyrone Woodley he's a white kid from England. I mean, the wrestling is just going to be disturbingly one-sided.
Conor McGregor is due back in Brooklyn court on Thursday to face multiple charges stemming from his Dolly incident in April at the Barclays Center. He last appeared in court on June 14th. Prosecutors informed the court that negotiations for a potential plea bargain were underway. In a brief statement to reporters, McGregor said, "I regret my actions that led to today. I understand the seriousness of this matter, and I am hopeful this will all get worked out." What do you say, Mr. Coughlin? Will this get worked out tomorrow?
Yes.
And what's going to happen?
I don't know what he'll get. It'll be nothing serious. It's interesting for me just kind of being, whenever I see stories like this and they write about like it, and the prosecutor said that they're in the process of working out a plea deal and they, it sounds all official and blah, blah, blah. And I think I have done that, I don't know, hundreds of times in my life, right? Just go before a judge, judge, we're working out something, you move on. And to think that somebody would write about that and to think that it'd be special is very interesting to me. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I'm a big deal in Conor McGregor isn't.
According to the criminal complaint, McGregor is facing two felony charges, criminal mischief in the third degree, criminal mischief in the second degree, and he is also facing 10 misdemeanor charges. Menacing in the third degree, 3 counts.
Yes.
Assault in the third degree, 2 counts. Menacing in the second degree, 2 counts. Attempted assault in the third degree, reckless endangerment in the second degree, and criminal mischief in the fourth degree. That's a lot of degrees.
Yeah, actually, it's one of my dumb Mike has weird hang-ups about the law thing, but I think that's actually all bullshit. I think the government should be allowed to charge you with one crime or one fucking crime only. They've charged him there with crimes that require intent, and they have charged him with crimes that do not require intent. Fuck you. Pick one. Say that I did it on purpose or say that I did it on accident and I was reckless. You don't get to have both cracks at it. I think it's horseshit when, like, they charge you with all this stuff, and they basically tell me a jury one day, be like, yeah, you could have done anything, right? So check it out. Connor's getting railroaded by the American justice system. That's what I'm telling you.
But he's probably just going to get off and not face any issues, correct?
Yeah, probably.
McGregor did send out a tweet today that he deleted shortly thereafter. It said two words.
Oh, no.
Cavalry Canada. This led to speculation that he would be in New York tomorrow and then make the trip to Calgary. Khabib Nurmagomedov has a like a presser, like a Q&A scheduled, and there is a UFC show in Calgary this weekend. So there is the idea that Conor and Khabib might have an announcement coming on Saturday.
Hey, I'm happy to hear that, just because anything where it tells me that Conor is going to fight again is good. I just want to see him fight again. I'm just tired. I want to see something fight. I want to see them book a fight, like a pay-per-view, that matters. Mm. And that happens. And after it happens, you go, wow, I saw something that actually mattered. Like, we kind of saw it with Cormier. We saw a fight happen, and when it was over, we went, oh, okay, I took some part of my time out of my day. I wasted some part of my life. And in return, I got to see something. Good for you. But don't then give me that and then, like, the next week turn around and be like, hey, you want to watch Darren Till fight for 5 rounds? Like, fuck you.
I just like that McGregor had the typo and called it Calvary.
I wondered about that. I wasn't sure if it was a typo or maybe he's just operating on a different level than us mortal men.
It could be. In injury news, Voltron.
Uzdemir.
I'm sorry, I should say Voltron. I always try and get that right.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Voltron Uzdemir is out of his UFC 227 bout with Alexander Gustafsson.
Son of a bitch.
I know. He got a badly broken nose, and it looks pretty damn legit. I saw
Was it in a bar fight?
I think it was in training this time.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, first it was visa issues that wouldn't let him go to Chile. And now he's got a broken nose, so he's out of another fight.
I do love that a man who is not an American committed a crime so violent in America that Chile would not let him out of America. Yet America was like, yeah, stay here. It's cool.
That guy probably deserved it anyway. Yeah. I forgot to mention, after Anthony Smith beat Shogun, he challenged Alexander Gustafsson for that next show, that UFC 227 card. He said he would fight Gus, but it appears Gustafsson, shortly after that challenge was laid, ended up getting injured himself and is also unable to fight on that card.
I get injured when I want to. When somebody gives me the a challenge of doing something boring with my time, yeah, I get injured too. Imagine that though. Think about that from what's his fucking
Anthony
name?
Smith.
Anthony Smith's perspective. He challenged Alexander Gustafsson. If he could get that fight, it'd be the biggest moment of his life, right? He'd be this huge deal. If this is like something incredible for him, if he could actually secure that booking, and yet if you tell me that this is what I have to look forward to, I think, oh my gosh, that's a horrible fucking fight. And I would openly campaign for that to not happen. I am saying that I have a rooting interest against Anthony Smith's happiness.
That would have been quite the run though. You know, if he could have beat Gustafsson, like imagine that in 3 months. Holy shit.
I know, but it'd be kind of weird if like, you know, fighting Alexander Gustafsson is a highlight in anybody's life. Like, you know, his name is Alexander Gustafsson. I know he's a good fighter and all this stuff, and we all have to pretend like it's not a joke that a grown man's name is Alexander Gustafsson, but still, come on.
Yeah. Gustafsson's team is claiming he wanted to fight Khalil Roundtree, who's also coming off a win, but he's not going to be medically cleared to compete at all. They wrote, doctors pulled Alex from the card last Friday, days before Anthony was to compete. Before that, we were trying to stay on the card. Assuming we could get cleared, we were prepared to face anyone. We assumed it would be Roundtree as he was ready to fight, and we were told Jan Blachowicz would fight at another time. We also offered to fight DC at heavyweight if he was healthy. So Alex was prepared to face anyone ranked or unranked, but the doctor said he was unfit to compete. It was determined last Friday he would not be on the card days before the Smith contest.
It's weird. You know, I was thinking about fighting Wanderlei Silva and Fyodor in back-to-back five-minute fights next Tuesday, but then I got an injury. It's just a damn shame that it happened at this crucial time in my life. Weird how that happened. I mean, if I hadn't gotten injured, I totally would have done it. I'm just letting everybody know that.
So as far as the light heavyweight division looks right now, we've made fun of it for a few years now, but you've got your light heavyweight champ weighing about 280 right now. And then you've
Rampage weight.
Your number one ranked guy at light heavyweight, Gustafsson, out with an injury. Volkan, ranked number two, out with an injury. Ilir Latifi, ranked number four, out with an injury. And by far your best fighter, John Jones, out probably for years. Good job.
Ilir Latifi is number four. Correct. Dear baby Jesus up there, please give me a UFC world title, undisputed UFC light heavyweight world title fight for the light heavyweight championship between Alexander Gustafsson and Ilir Latifi. Please let that be the headliner of a pay-per-view, just so I can tell people, just so I can finally be able to look someone in the eye and tell them, America's not racist. Nobody wants to watch white guys fight either if they're boring. Can you imagine? I mean, that is getting to Nico Montano territory as far as a draw is concerned.
He's not even Native American. Brian Ortega was at LFA 45 on Friday, and he was interviewed during the show, and he commented on his standing with Dana White at the moment. Ortega said, "I'm feeling a lot better now. The heartbreak was a little bit real at first, but then once I started to realize the bigger picture and everything, and I had to put my ego aside and put my thinking cap on in terms of business-wise, we made the right decision. I talked to Dana just the other day, and everything is good between me and him. He compensated me. We reached an agreement." Ortega had turned down a short-notice fight with Jeremy Stephens, which would have been for an interim title. By not accepting the bout, the UFC saw fit not to pay him at all because, as he claims the UFC put it to him, your job is to show up and fight. So apparently Ortega and Dana got all that squared away, and Dana gave him a few bucks to smooth things over, it sounds like.
You know, for people like us who are normal, who are normal and me who can approximate it, I think that sometimes we see the Dana Whites of the world, they're kind of the Trumps of the world, and it's off-putting because we don't understand it. But there is, like, at the end of the day, like, these are Dana White's a very emotional person, and it doesn't sound fair to us to say you have to ignore what he says in the first moment, but you do, because when it all shakes out, he does actually tend to end up, you know, taking care of guys and get them the money and things like that. He's just, some type A personalities need to yell at you a lot, make you feel like you're small, Dad.
In upcoming fight news, we've got Little Nog versus Sam Alvey at UFC Sao Paulo on September 22nd.
What the fuck? Like, you're the UFC. Really? Like, the fights that make you go, wow, that's sad, are not supposed to happen in the UFC. This is the kind of fight that you'd be like, oh, yeah, this got booked on Bare Knuckle Boxing Wyoming 3? Okay, yeah, that's really sad. It shouldn't be like, these guys are going to fight in the UFC in the ultimate proving ground.
UFC 230 at MSG is starting to take shape a little bit. There's two bouts that have been rumored, and I think even the UFC has said these fights are a done deal, but I'm seeing different stuff, like some guys haven't signed yet. One is Chris Weidman versus Luke Rockhold 2.
That's good.
And the other is,
I think,
Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa Borchina. And I guess Costa's signed, but Romero just had surgery for a broken orbital bone and may not be ready and hasn't signed anything yet.
They've done, honestly, I'm feeling the effects of all their bullshit title things. I just don't care. I don't know who's the best. It never felt like Whitaker really was the best, and all he's ever done is beat the same dude in two title fights, and it's good wins and all, but now he's injured, and there's just going to be like at least two champions are going to emerge before Whitaker fights again. So who gives a shit? I mean, there's going to be like, seriously, Whitaker's going to come back and defend the title against an interim champion while another man says, no, I'm the interim champion. They're going to have disputed interim championships. Just watch.
I don't think Costa's ready for Yoel Romero. Seems very fast.
No, but they have, it does seem like they're trying to book stuff like this a little bit right now. Like there's a,
the younger versus the older guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess you got to do it. And I will acknowledge it on some level. I try to remember that because of how we view the sport, what we've seen of it and followed it, but also our vantage point, it's very easy to get caught up in the nostalgia of a fighter and to think this seems really fast. And then you kind of realize, oh, wait a second. Like it turns out that Shogun sucks or, you know,
yeah, I don't think Romero's at that suck point yet.
No, but there are those, you know, you kind of get used to look, some of the big guys that they're at the middleweight, they do kind of suck now. You know, Weidman hasn't looked good in a while, except for the one weird fight he had with Gastelum. But Gastelum looks good, and then he looks bad. And Bisping is good and bad. And even Gastelum's good and bad. Like, there's so many of these guys. It's a weird fucking division. All what I'm saying is, again, the UFC's killed the sport, my love thereof.
Fight Night Denver on November 10th has Frankie Edgar versus Korean Zombie in the main event. And a co-main of Donald Cerrone versus Platinum Mike Perry.
Ooh, I wonder if I should go to that show.
You just
that's a really good main event. I know what I said, but then I got excited because I thought, oh, it's Denver. There's marijuana. And then I thought, wait a second, I live in Illinois and I'm very sick. I don't need to go to Denver. Yeah,
you could still go.
Yeah, I could. Those are two really good fights.
Yeah,
they're action fights.
Neither of them will probably end up happening. So.
And that's the problem. When they used to book a show like that, I'll always remember the show they had there in Milwaukee. Where it was just, I looked it on paper. I'm like, that's an action show. And then the fights happen. I never used to think, you know, what are the odds of that fight even happening? Like, there's a 50-50 shot that the guys die before that happens.
Korean Zombie could just be pulled back into, like, a South Korean-North Korea war any minute. You never know.
There's a very realistic chance that the UFC is the epicenter of the Korean Peninsula conflict because Dana White and Donald Trump and Vadim will be involved somehow, and the Korean Zombie will get called back to war, and then we're all going to be sad because we'll think, oh, now I know what the cost of war truly is as he dies.
That is kind of funny. I didn't even think of that. We didn't talk about it last week either, that M1 and UFC are like co-promoting that Moscow show. Just kind of funny with Trump awesome. And Russia and that whole storyline. And now,
now
all of a sudden UFC is going to Russia and working with like this super shady promotion Dana White wanted nothing to do with for a decade plus.
And they're calling them UFC Russia. like, I'm amazed, but on some weird level, Vadim, he beat Dana. I don't know. I guess when it's all said and done, you can't beat the power of a Russian oil oligarch.
This is going to be a hard one, and I'm only bringing it up.
That's what she said.
I'm only bringing this up because it relates to something, another fight that's coming up this week, actually. Can you tell me what happened in MMA history 13 years ago this week? It would be July, late July of 2005. This is obscure and difficult, but there's a reason for it.
Okay, 2005. I had just graduated from undergrad.
Congrats.
I think I did. Yeah. That's when I did that. Let's see. That's July. That summer. That was a weird summer. I just started working for my – that August, I started working for my state representative as his assistant. I didn't do anything that July. Something obscure that July. Pride was dying around that time. Was this Pride 34?
No, this was K1 World Grand Prix Hawaii.
Bob Sapp show?
No, BJ Penn beat Henzo Gracie by unanimous decision.
Wow, one of those shows. Okay.
The reason I bring this up is because Henzo Gracie fights tomorrow night.
Oh my god!
Against Yuki Kondo at ONE Championship 78.
I mean, he was old back then.
He's 51.
What the fuck? How many people have to be derelict in their duties as human beings to let a 51-year-old person fight?
Well,
like, what? Why?
At least he's not fighting somebody outweighs him by 100 pounds like every time he's Gabby 51. Garcia fights.
He's 51.
Yes.
What the fuck? Why does he want to do this? Grow up. Just get a real job. Love your kids. Be happier.
You think he does this because he's unhappy?
Of course. He's a grown man getting fistfights still.
Those Hawaii shows were weird. Like Rumble on the Rock and stuff. That was a weird time. Yeah. There's like a lot of good fight. Well, there was no Bellator, but you would have thought with like Pride and UFC, and I don't even know if Affliction was around, but Bodog, all those companies, that there would be enough good guys like that tournament with like Carlos Condit and Jake Shields and Anderson and all those guys, Okami. Like, those guys weren't signed by anybody. It's just weird. Like, there would never be this indie show now with all this talent. I don't think.
Yeah, there is. It's Dana White's Fight Night.
Yes, I wouldn't really call that an indie show.
But here's the thing. It is, though.
But like, those guys aren't, like, top 10 level guys. All those guys fighting Rumble on the Rock were, like, top 10 welterweights.
Yeah, but, you know, again, those guys are fighting in UFC Nebraska. You know, that's when you're going to get Gaethje versus Vic or some shit, whatever the fuck it'll be there. And it, you know, it's spread out a little bit more. We're still getting... That's a good thing about the UFC is that we are still getting the good fights. Like, they still tend to more or less book the big fights still, I hope. I pray.
So this is Henzo Gracie's first fight since his loss to Matt Hughes at UFC 112 Invincible back in April of 2010. He lost that by TKO. Yuki Kondo is 60-34-9. Very experienced.
He was 60-34-9 at that time, or is now?
Yuki Kondo is currently 43 years old and 60-34-9.
Well, you know, this is really sad. Like, you can't play baseball at that age. You shouldn't get in fist fights. Seriously, if you heard the, like, there was a game of 5-on-5 basketball and there were 10 men out there and they were all 50 plus years old, you would put good money that at least one of them got genuinely injured at a pickup game, let alone a fist fight.
Yuki Kondo defeated Semi Schilt in 1996.
Old school pancreas. Probably at work.
Holy shit.
Japan's fucking weird, man. You look at, like, I think this is one of these things when people are like, oh, Americans are so insulated. They need to, like, travel more and learn the world and blah, blah, blah. And they think that, like, this is going to make Americans more sensitive. We're going to go to the rest of the world and be like, wait, you're telling me that in Japan they sell used women's underwear and vending machines and they have small men fight giant men just for the hell of it, even if they're 50 or 60 years old? They're going to go, fuck me, man. America's awesome.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. So Kondo would have been 20 years old when he debuted. I was trying to do the math. I'm like, he's only 43, but he was fighting in 96. But I guess that's possible. Jeez,
that's really terrifying.
I saw something. there's only three players left in the NBA who were playing in the 90s.
Vince Carter.
Yeah.
I
can tell you the other two if you want.
Dirk Nowitzki.
Yep. Somebody who played with Dirk Nowitzki.
He left the Spurs. Tony Parker?
Jason Terry.
Oh, I wouldn't know that one.
Yeah. But there's more MMA fighters from the 90s than there are NBA players. Like, how fucked up is that?
That's because in the NBA, you only get paid if you're actually able to produce. In an MMA, if you're popular, you get paid. That's the difference.
I know. I understand that.
I know.
Obviously.
I know you do. I'm telling the viewer. I'm telling the one listener, because some people need to be educated. And that's what I am. I'm an educator.
But how ludicrous is that when you think about the effects of playing basketball has on your body compared to cage fighting?
It tells me that basketball players are pussies.
There's something wrong here is what I'm trying to say. This weekend we have a couple shows, believe it or not. I know you were excited for Ryzen 11.
Oh, yeah. Is that this weekend?
July, wow, okay. July 29th.
Snuck up on me. Wow.
Is that Sunday? Today's, well, it's Thursday now. It's Thursday here on the East Coast. So Sunday, yeah. Loser Sunday the 29th.
Gay Coast.
Okay.
Faggot Coast.
It's weird.
What? Yeah.
Huh. What do we have on this show, Ryzen 11? Funny you should ask. We have Takanori Gomi versus Melvin Gallard.
Yeah, everybody has that down. No fucking shit. Like, great job, Matt. You told us about the Gomi Gallard fight. The fucking world's all had it on our calendars for a while. We're well aware.
This is being fought. I'm typing this into Google at 73 kilograms.
160 pounds.
161 pounds. No way Gallard makes that. He was fighting at 185 in Bellator. Like 6 months ago.
Yeah, but he can use cocaine to cut weight now.
Japan seems uptight about drugs like that. They don't like recreational drugs, but they're good with performance enhancing drugs, it seems.
Exactly. It's performance enhancing cocaine.
It's got creatine in it.
Exactly.
Horiguchi
helps
fights.
Your dick work too, yeah.
Oh, okay. Horiguchi fights on the show. Who else? Diego Brandão is on the undercard. Rin Nakai returns.
What?
Yeah, Darren Cruikshank versus Tom Santos.
Ooh, I've been waiting for that Tom Santos fight.
This will be taking place again on the 29th on Sunday at the Saitama Super Arena. There you go.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. There is also a UFC on Fox, Big Fox. I don't know if this is the last show on Big Fox, but we got to be getting close to it. Is the 7 years up this summer? It was a 7-year deal, right?
Yeah, I think they start a new in January.
Was Kane versus JDS? Was that?
Yep.
Yeah. 2011.
Jeez, must be.
Do you remember that was such a big deal at the time? Remember that they were just doing
back
one
then
fight?
Yeah. They thought it still mattered in the respectability. It's just, nobody gives a shit.
Well, it's funny now Fox has SmackDown. It's just funny how fast things have changed in 7 years.
Yeah, they were worried about having UFC, and I was like, yeah, let's have the company that had a grown woman get down to her underwear and bark for her boss on television. Fucking disgusting company.
That could happen. In Calgary, Alberta, Canada, this Saturday at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, we have a headliner of Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier. This is number two for them. A significant lightweight fight here. I don't think either of these gets a title shot because you've got Conor and Khabib and Tony jamming things up, obviously. But you could argue both guys are as deserving as those other guys we mentioned. Their first fight ended with some controversy. I think Poirier was getting the better of it. He was landing a lot of body kicks in that first fight. And Alvarez kind of made a comeback in the second round, but drilled Poirier with knees to the head when he had both feet and both hands down. And then he was actually on his knees, and Alvarez kneed him again in the face, and the fight was declared a no contest.
Yeah, that really was one of the most bizarre endings, because Alvarez hit him with knees that were so illegal that they really were borderline, like, actually illegal. I'm talking criminal charges level illegal, because they were so beyond the rules and scope of what anybody would anticipate and agree to in a fight. But that should be a hell of a fight, and I feel for Poirier in the sense of he thinks, if I get a win, this gives me a title shot, and I understand why he thinks that, but there's like 13 titles to fight for, and none of them the real one, so I'm not really sure how he thinks he's even going to get a shot, because how would you even know if you got a title shot? Like, you might get a title shot scheduled, and it'll be like a title or not a title three different times, because, you know, there's all the champions, because the company's a mess.
I know we've been over this a lot, but Poirier is one of the most underrated guys in MMA, in my opinion. Like, he's not a draw or anything, but he's been around a long time. He debuted in the UFC back in 2011, January of 2011. And it's like, he's beat a lot of really good guys. Justin Gaethje, Anthony Pettis, Jim Miller, Joe Duffy, Nancy Medeiros. And he was fighting at 145 for a long time. He moved up to 155 and didn't skip a beat. And he's just really, really good, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. Alvarez is no easy task, but Alvarez is a little older, a little longer in the tooth, almost in every fight he's in. So it'll be an action fight. I can't imagine it wouldn't. And there's some heat between the guys, because Poirier felt like Alvarez was ducking him and tried to get out of the fight with the illegal knees. So I'm really looking forward to this fight. It should be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if it's, I don't think it's possible for it to be a bad fight, whether it's as good as, look, the first fight was on this way to being an incredible fight.
Awesome.
Until, you know, Alvarez lost his fucking mind. So presuming that he doesn't become a moron, the way they match up their styles, their skill sets, I guess Alvarez could make it boring. There's always that chance that he tries to smother it. But I think this should be a good fight. And actually, I think I might like Poirier. I'm not always sure on him, because I think he's been through a lot of wars. Mm-hmm. That shit catches up to you.
Absolutely.
But so is Alvarez. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe Poirier is one of those guys that I slept on because he was so young coming into the company that you forget that, no, he's still got a lot of time.
Yeah. I mean, I bet he's a little shop-worn. Cause, I mean, he was fighting like Eric Koch back in, like, I think WEC, like,
yeah,
way back when. You're talking, you know, 8 years ago at this point. But this is Alvarez's last fight on this contract too. He hasn't re-signed, so he's doing one of those where you gamble, and if you win, you can get a big contract maybe. But if you lose, you might have made a mistake. So
honestly, I think that it's the right thing to do, though, because they can cut you after a loss anyways.
True.
So at this point, the only leverage you'll ever have is when you don't have the contract.
In the co-main, we have Jose Aldo versus Jeremy Stephens.
That's a hell of a fight.
Yeah, free TV, Jose Aldo. I want to say
first time ever. First time
WEC. Yeah, probably. I can't think of a time he's been on free TV. And this is, I think, the first time he hasn't been in a title fight in forever.
Ever?
Like, ever, yeah. Since he was in Brazil fighting, since WEC, he had a couple wins, yeah, early. But yeah, I mean, a decade since he's probably been in a title fight against Jeremy Stephens, who hits hard. We're going to find out how old Jose Aldo is. So what this is really going to tell us. Is he totally shot at this point, or does he still have something left at coming off both those Holloway losses by TKO? I mean, three of his last four fights, he's lost by knockout.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, isn't it? Like, you know, you get the one quick 13-second knockout, and people are like, okay, you know, it happens. And then two more happen, and suddenly it's like, you know, that's 3 out of 4, and that's not a good look. And Stevens hits hard, and is Stevens, again, is he one of those guys similar to Poirier in that he got to the UFC really kind of, like, younger than you thought he was, And he's been through all these wars, and you kind of get this early impression of guys, at least I know that I do, where I kind of slot them at a certain level, and then you forget that they do improve. And next thing you know, Jeremy Stephens is fighting Jose Aldo. And if Stephens were to win, it wouldn't be that big of a surprise to me. Whereas 5 years ago, I would have been like, are you fucking mind? It's Jeremy Stephens. Like,
are you out of your mind? It's Jose Aldo.
Well, yeah. I mean, five years ago, I would have thought it would be far more likely that Jeremy Stephens would have blown up a trailer full of meth and he would beat Jose Aldo.
Very true. Very true. I mean, for what's worth, Stevens has won three in a row. Gilbert Melendez, Duho Choi, and Josh Emmett. So he's got a few good wins.
Yeah. He's coming on. You know, he's kind of putting away. And it's not the traditional path of great fighters, but it does happen. The Nick Diaz types, where these guys are young and they get some early losses and they go through their wars. And I'm sure he's he went to jail for beating women, I think. So he's on the right path.
Aldo is also the oldest looking 31-year-old on earth.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I remember years ago when I looked up in like the Nogueira brothers, like 30 or 31, and Wanderlei Silva was around the same age. And I just like, it became very clear to me. I'm like, oh yeah, this fighting thing, it has a real tangible effect on your health. Look at these people. Like, they're barely older than me and they look like hell.
And I think another person who hasn't been in a non-title fight in a long time is Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She's fighting Tisha Torres.
Yeah, actually. Look, Calgary has been fucked in the past by the UFC. I just recall them having some pay-per-views canceled and things like that. But for a free fucking show, this is a hell of a show.
Absolutely.
I won't be able to watch it live, but this looks good.
Yeah, I mean, Torres only has losses to, I think, Rose and Jessica Andrade. And, I mean, obviously, Joanna's, you got to call her the second best, you know, 115-pound woman fighter in the world. I don't see her losing this fight. I think just for whatever reason, Rose has her number, unless, you know, Joanna's lost her confidence. But I don't see her losing to Tisha Torres.
She shouldn't, but yeah, look, sometimes people lose and weird things happen and they lose a little confidence. They're not as sharp and it happened. I'm sure I am not a sexist. I've seen it happen to men. It can happen to women.
In the opener, we've got Alexander Hernandez versus Olivier Aubin Mercier.
No one cares.
Prelims, Jordan Meehan versus Alex Morono.
Yeah, no one cares.
This one you'll like. Cajun Johnson versus Islam Makhachev.
Awesome.
Cajun versus Islam.
I mean, holy shit. If Donald Trump finds out of the Cajun versus Islam took place in Canada, he'll be very disappointed.
We also have Hakeem Dawodu versus Austin Arnett.
Dawodu, watch this thing, huh?
This is one of those where the prelims are actually on Big Fox, so
which is always weird.
Yes, in the opener on Fox, we have Gadzimurad Antigalov versus Ion Kutalaba.
Oh, well, I actually do know Ion Kutalaba, but yes.
He's the guy who paints himself green, right?
Like, yeah, and sometimes he holds up candles.
Candelabra. Got it.
Yeah.
Took a minute.
I'm Dennis Miller here.
That's not a compliment. On the prelims, you got John McDessie versus Ross Pearson, who is still alive. Alexis Davis versus Caitlin Chukagian. Dustin Ortiz versus Mateus Nicolau. Ronda Marcos versus Nina Ansaroff. And Devin Powell versus Alvaro Herrera.
Yeah. All things considered, a pretty good show. A
lot of fights.
Yeah, and some good fights up and down.
13 fights. That's one day.
Yeah, but let's be honest. I'm going to put over under at 11 actually make it to air.
weight cut issues, or what's going to be the problem?
I don't know. So, do you think it'll be more or fewer than 11 fights take place?
More.
All right. Let's see. I'll take the under then. I'll take under 11, and 11 will be pushed. But yeah.
Okay.
Let's see.
All right. Well, that's a good game. We can do that every week.
I like that. Yeah.
All right. Someone will have to track that.
Yeah, a listener.
They don't listen to this part of the show. In stuff news, it's actually
now they're listening. Yeah.
This actually right at the 60-minute mark too. Look at that. This is actually MMA related too. This caught my eye. Dana White drops $1 million on his son's massive 16th birthday bash.
I saw that shit.
Essentially, they rented out like this nightclub in Vegas, and for his son's like party, it's like on this rooftop pool in some, you know, casino in Vegas. Musical acts included Migos, Everlast, DJ Carnage, and ASAP Rocky. I know you're not really up on your hip hop, but Migos are like the biggest rap group in the world right now, like ton of hits, platinum records. And they had to be pushing $500,000 themselves just to get them to perform at this thing. Like a year ago, he had Kendrick Lamar perform at his other kid's party, and he like had to top it this year. The son also got a customized Land Rover, and only 6 of them have ever been produced.
Like, I know you've got the money. Like, I understand it doesn't cost Dana anything really practically to do these things. You want to make your kids happy, but isn't it weird to raise your kids with stuff like that? Like, I know you want to give your kid the best. But isn't there some part of being a parent where you're like, yeah, I want my kid to grow up and be normal and not know what it's like to have a $500,000 birthday party or some shit? Like, how do you really expect your kid to be? Like, seriously, what kind of a man is that kid going to be at 30?
He's going to be a damn Bilzerian.
Well, he's actually kind of successful.
Yeah, but I think he inherited most of that. Now he just sells weed. Right. So does Anthony like Johnson.
Exactly.
Aggressive.
Hey, anybody can do it.
Right. Oh, sell something people want. Okay.
Hey, there's a lot of people not making money.
True. Totally. But I'm just saying.
I should start doing that.
Yeah. Start growing it in your backyard.
Yeah.
There's video of Aiden, Dana's son, like, jumping off a deck into the crowd, like in like crowd surfing. Did you see that?
I saw something, and I saw some pictures, and I just looked at it. It just seems so fucking surreal. The idea that anybody would like truly let their kid live like this.
Mm.
Like, geez, Louis, does he buy his kids GHB for their dates? Fuck's sake.
Back in 2013, White had a snow machine brought to his Las Vegas home so he could give his family a chance to go sledding on Christmas, and apparently even paid out $2,500 a month in fines for 5 years running in order to construct a massive backyard pool for his kids that didn't meet HOA regulations.
I guess if you've got the money, you might as well spend it, but loser. Like, anybody can spend money and destroy their kid's life. So.
True. You can destroy your kid's life without spending any money, too.
That's true, yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. In other news, there's water on Mars.
Yeah. This is the biggest news in the history of the world.
Not our world, in Mars's world, probably.
History of humanity.
Scientists have uncovered a stable body of liquid water on Mars in what some are calling a game changer in the search for alien life. What is believed to be liquid water is sitting below Mars' southern polar ice cap and is described as a well-defined 20-kilometer-wide zone, which is about 12 and a half miles. Is that your dog?
In the background?
I hear weird breathing.
Yeah, that might be him, yeah.
Is he? How close are you to?
On the same couch.
Wow. The findings are published in the Journal of Science, were made possibly by Mars Advanced Radar for subsurface.
The balls on somebody's
head. Ionosphere sounding.
What are you going to name your journal? Science. You can't name your journal Science. Fucking hell. What are you going to name your journal? Honesty. What? You can't do that.
Speaking with BBC, Professor Roberto Orsai said it probably isn't a very large lake, but added that this is a body of water, not runoff from a glacier or something else. This really qualifies this as a body of water, a lake, not some kind of meltwater filling some space between rock and ice, as happens in certain glaciers on Earth. So they're people have speculated for years and years that there could be life on Mars, but this, gives us more evidence that it's fact and not fiction, I guess.
You know, when I read the story and I started thinking about what it would mean, if there's water, the odds of there being microscopic life increases exponentially and blah, blah, blah. But this is all hypothetical. Like, we all have all these ideas like, oh, maybe this is what it's like. But when you really get that proof, I think something profound happens in like the collective unconscious, and when everybody's just like, oh shit, there's actually life somewhere else. When you can and if it's on the literally, if we find it on the closest planet to us or the second closest planet to us, like, come on, if you can find life on the planet right next door, of course you're gonna find it elsewhere.
Didn't you already presume that?
But there's a difference psychologically. Something happens between,
you seen those like clips of like other like planets that are like not identical to Earth, but are like really, really similar?
I don't know if that's real.
How do you know? How do you know any of this is real?
No, that's true. But there's a good chance that all of this is made up in my head.
There's probably no Mars. You're probably not even really talking to me. This is all made up in your head.
God, imagine if I fucking invented a life this boring and pathetic. God, it'll just fucking kill me now if I'm up there. Like, if I'm in a coma and you can read all this, just pull the plug. This isn't worth it.
Stupid. I guess that's it. This thrilling discovery is a highlight for planetary science and will contribute to our understanding of the evolution of Mars, the history of water on our neighbor planet, and its habitability. Woo! That was a hard one.
That's what she said.
No one's ever said that to you.
That's for sure.
Speaking of hard bodies, Matt Riddle might be signing with the WWE.
Okay.
He used to fight in the UFC.
Yeah, then he had like a bunch of like drug problems.
It was just weed. How dare you?
That's true.
He's no different than you.
I am so removed from. I don't even record wrestling anymore. I don't give a shit.
He's been working the indies a lot, like PWG and stuff. And he looks. I've seen like highlights. I haven't actually watched one of his full matches, but he looks really good. Like, he's pretty charismatic and has some good spots. He's good. I think WWE was shying away from him because of all the weed stuff. And at one point he said he smoked weed so he wouldn't beat his kids. Remember that? That wasn't a good look.
He was a professional cage fighter. Let's not expect too much. It's pro wrestling. I don't know. I don't care about any of this. All I want life anymore is just, I want to have a family and a wife and kids. And I just want to, I want to have so much going on with all that I don't care about what's on TV. You know, I want the simple things in life.
It's not that simple. Yeah. Right now you do have the simple things in life.
That's true.
Yes. Something that doesn't seem so simple is Serena Williams claiming discrimination after her latest random drug test. The tennis star recently advanced all the way to the Wimbledon finals before falling to Angelique Kerber. But that achievement may have caught the eye of USADA, which, according to Williams, randomly selected her for another drug test on Tuesday. Suffice it to say, Williams wasn't happy with this development. On Twitter, she wrote, "And it's that time of the day to get randomly drug tested and only test Serena. Out of all the players, it's been proven I'm the one getting tested the most. Discrimination? I think so. At least I'll be keeping the sport clean. Hashtag stay positive."
That's not what the word discrimination means, you fucking nitwit. That's not discrimination. There's a lot of things that might be, what are they discriminating against you on the basis of you being good? Is that what you're complaining about? Also, it's never a good look when somebody bitches about, oh, they make me take all these drug tests. Well, if you're not on drugs, who gives a shit? You're just pissing in a cup. Are you bitching and moaning that you peed in a cup too much?
Accusing USADA of discrimination is no small matter, but Williams may have a case. According to the USADA's database, which was updated July 20th, she's already been drug tested 5 times this year, meaning this would be her 6th test. Meanwhile, the last 3 Grand Slam winners, Kerber, Simona Halep, and Caroline Wozniacki, have yet to be tested at all this year. Even Maria Sharapova, who received a 2-year ban from the sport for using an illegal substance, has no drug tests on record with USADA this year. She's been tested 6 times this year, and these other top 4 players, 3 of whom have won Grand Slam finals, haven't been tested at all.
You're telling me that Maria Sharapova, is that who you said?
Yes.
Has not been drug tested this year by USADA?
Correct.
Is that probably because she lives in Russia? You know, maybe if you live in USA, you get tested by USADA more. And that's just that's the price you pay for living in freedom. You know, you uppity bitch. Take your, you fucking, you look like you're on, it's a fucking Williams sisters. There's nothing you can say about them. It doesn't get you in trouble somewhere. So I'm just done.
Yeah. Sounds like she's getting tested a lot more than other high-profile players. Don't know. Maybe it truly is random. They just throw darts at a board and it just lands on Serena. I don't know.
Well, but then take it as a badge of honor.
The main reason I brought it up was because it's a USADA story, and we always enjoy those.
I wonder if Nowitzki came out and said that she is, in fact, being unfairly targeted.
How do you... Maybe it was dick pills.
Well, that would be a unique one.
That would be hilarious. Oh, that would be good when the women start failing.
And they just bust out. I've always thought the women could have a far stronger case because, you know, they're genetically different and men don't know how it works. So it's like, you know, if a woman shows up like, and she's like, I had menstrual cramps. All the guys are like, yeah, it's checked out to me. Yeah, it sounds like something that women go through.
There might be science on that. I don't know. Were you a fan of Frasier?
It was all right.
There's a likelihood that there's going to be a reboot. Kelsey Grammer's exploring the option now with CBS. Unlike the slew of recent revivals of comedy series with the original cast and original creative auspices like Will and Grace, Roseanne and Murphy Brown, Frasier is envisioned as a reboot, likely set in a new city with the title character played by Grammer as a possible link to the Emmy-winning 93 series. Does this interest you?
No.
Me neither. The only thing I liked about Kelsey Grammer was when he fell off that stage. That was good. That was the funniest thing he ever did, by far.
Like his show, it was fine. Like, I don't have a problem with it, really. But at the same time, if I never watched Frasier again, I'd be okay. I think I should read I'd rather read a book.
Frasier set a record for the most Emmy Awards won by a scripted series at the time, 37, including 5 consecutive Emmys for Outstanding Comedy Series. I remember liking The Dad and The Weird Dog they had. I didn't really watch it. I think I was watching Seinfeld or something else at the time. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just never on my radar, and it was always, it's probably a little adult, or even now, like, it's kind of effete. It's a very effete show.
I don't know what that means.
It's a word that snobs use to say snobby.
Basically. Yeah, I don't have a good vocabulary. Even though I'm an elitist on the East Coast.
True.
All right, the show's going to take a dark turn here, and I think this is what everyone enjoys most about this program.
The way to end the show?
I bring it back. I bring it back. I try to finish strong here. So we're going to get into bad people doing bad things here. And I think that should maybe just be a segment on the show, but I was shocked by the story. Hang on. Pennsylvania board finds Bill Cosby is a sexually violent predator.
What?
Yeah, can you believe it? Bill Cosby of the Cosby Show fame. Pennsylvania Sexual Offenders Assessment Board found that Bill Cosby is a sexually violent predator and should be classified as such, according to a court filing in the sexual assault case. Still, the ultimate decision on Cosby's status will be up to Montgomery County Judge Stephen O'Neill at an upcoming hearing, according to Kate Delano, public information officer for the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office.
So I'm supposed to believe that Bill Cosby is sexually dangerous?
The creator of Fat Albert, come on.
Huh. I mean, if only there were warning signs or some sort of news about this, but
I can't believe no one spoke out.
You know, it's women just need to be a little more forthright.
In April, Cosby, who turned 81 this month, was found guilty on 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault for drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand at his home in a Philadelphia suburb in 2004. Cosby's defense counsel said afterward that the comedian planned to appeal the case. He faces up to 10 years in prison on each count, although legal experts said he is likely to spend much less time, if any, behind bars. The Sexual Offenders Assessment Board is responsible for conducting assessments of convicted sex offenders to help courts determine whether they meet the legal criteria to be classified as sexually violent predator. This distinction would mean that Cosby is subject to lifetime registration with state police, lifetime sex offender counseling, and community notification.
It's very challenging. Somebody has to sit there and make the determination of whether drugging hundreds of women over decades and having sexual relations with them while they're in a state of unconsciousness and showing no remorse, not just no remorse, but one can even argue pride in what you've done, if that person might be a sexual danger to the community in the future. I'm guessing it's a 50-50 shot if he should go to jail or not.
When I read that headline, I'm like, is there a more open and shut case like ever? Like
OJ,
I can't believe this. But like OJ, whatever, was found not guilty. He's already been convicted of this. And there's question about whether or not he should be like in the sex offender registry. Like what the fuck?
You don't want to ruin his reputation.
Yeah, I guess. I just presumed. I actually hadn't really thought about it, but when I read it, I'm like, isn't this obvious? Like, what the hell? Like, this is a debatable thing, whether or not...
It's probably one of those things where you have to formally do it.
I guess.
Legally, we want to encourage that. We want to formally go through process and stuff. And all that. It's good.
In other garbage human being news, ex-gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar has been assaulted in prison, so that's good news.
Yeah.
He was assaulted by inmates at the Arizona Penitentiary, where he's serving a de facto life sentence after pleading guilty to sexual assault and child pornography charges. Nassar was physically attacked within hours after being released into the general population at the U.S. Penitentiary in Tucson, Arizona, according to documents filed Tuesday by Nassar's attorney in Ingram County Circuit Court.
I always love these horseshit things where these prisoners are like, oh, we're going to stand up and we're gonna show you what's really right and wrong. But oh, you abused your position to inappropriately touch a bunch of 12 and 13-year-old girls. Oh, I'm going to judge you, me, the multiple murderer. Like, fuck off. Like, hey, this is like, oh, what he did is really disgusting. No, you're all fucking animals. I hope you all die.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
Maybe.
Yeah, you can't fuck with kids. You know, somebody shouldn't
kill people either.
I agree.
Do you? It sounds to me like you're defending, you're saying that murder is okay in certain circumstances, and I just don't agree.
There's got to be some sort of situation where murder, what if you're like a policeman and there's a black kid running away from you?
A black kid is a victim of systemic oppression. You should do the right thing. Exactly.
I like the idea that if you fuck with kids, like there's going to be some repercussions besides you hanging out in jail for a few years. That doesn't bother me.
Honestly, I actually do have a somewhat of a problem with society's attitude of it's like, hey, you're in prison, you get raped, you get beat up. It's like, you should, like, if we want to punish people that way, we should all have to come out and say it. Otherwise, no. Like, prison, that's awful enough. And you shouldn't have, like, God damn, man, prison sucks without getting raped. I mean, rape is really bad. Like, nobody's going to enjoy that.
Yeah.
Maybe the rapist. Maybe the rapist.
The way they describe it is physically attacked in quotes. So I'm not exactly sure what happened to him.
Yeah, he got raped.
What, that is a weird response. Like, I could see beating the shit out of him or something, but.
Like, I'm going to show you that it's wrong to use sex in an inappropriate manner by putting my big cock in your ass. That'll teach you not to touch little girls again.
What would have been the appropriate punishment for Nasser in your estimation?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I really don't have a good answer other than, I guess, however many years in jail we all decide or is the appropriate.
Like this guy, this guy's a monster.
Yeah. I don't actually even know if jail is the right thing. This is something different. Here's the thing. I don't have enough answers about life. This is a bigger question. Do you believe in, can people like this be rehabilitated? If so, then we do so. If they can't, then we just punish them. Do we punish people for things or we try to change them? There's something clearly wrong there. He can't ever be around people, I would imagine. But I don't think that anything good comes of, I mean, you should try to do something good with even the most evil thing. You know, if you can learn something, figure out how to prevent this from happening in the future, as opposed to, you know, just putting him in some prison, he gets punched a few times. Like, maybe that makes you feel good. You see it on the news, but I'd rather if he was in some sort of institution and we studied him and we stopped a bunch of little kids from getting their buttholes fingered because of, we had the breakthrough and we call it the Nasser rule and then nobody gets Nassered again.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
In other weird,
it should have just ended there.
People in prison news. This headline caught my eye in the New York Post. Serial killer accidentally kills himself in jail during sex act.
Oh.
Would you like to hear more about this? I'm going to tell you. Yeah. A German serial killer who murdered...
Germany, of course. Yes.
Because Larry Nasser is some angel. A German serial killer who murdered 5 female hitchhikers accidentally killed himself while performing a strange solo sex act in his prison cell over the weekend. A Gideus Schiffer dubbed the...
Does the article actually say strange?
Yes.
That's bullshit. That's editorializing.
Okay.
They should just report the facts.
Performing a solo sex act in his prison cell over the weekend, a Gideus Schiffer dubbed the Akin Strangler gave himself a fatal electric shock after tying a cable from a lamp around his penis and nipples. He was still tied up when guards at Bochum Prison in the North Rhine-Westphalia state opened his room Monday morning. Prison spokeswoman Candida Tunkel said he removed a cable from his bedside table lamp, then he wound it around his nipples and his penis and stuck the end in a power socket. A postmortem established that Schiffer, 62, died of heart failure as a result of an electric current flowing through his chest.
I guess that's an alternative to the electric chair.
Yeah. Yeah. My question is this: what kind of prison for like a multiple like serial killer has lamps in
it? I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, that's a really weird thing for he has a lamp. Like he has access to things without electricity. He's a murderer. That's a dangerous thing.
And
but they know what they're doing, I guess.
And what a weird way to go out, by the way.
Yeah, that's oof.
Like if he was trying to commit suicide, would you? Like the whole thing's weird. Like I don't understand what he was trying to accomplish here.
Imagine that you've killed 5 people in your life. Okay, and that's not the weirdest part of your obituary.
Cops said they did not suspect foul play, and his lawyer claimed the murderer was not suicidal. Schiffer was sentenced to life in 2008 for a string of grisly murders committed between 1983 and 1990. The authorities used DNA evidence to convict him 18 years after his final murder. He picked up his victims, one of whom was just 15, as they tried to hitch rides home from nightclubs before handcuffing and tying them up. He raped 3 of the women and buried them in the woods. He's a former insurance salesman who was arrested back in 2007 while stealing scrap metal.
I guess your reputation in jail goes up quite a bit when you go from dude that stole scrap metal to dude that murdered 5 children. Like one of those is a little more intimidating in the showers.
He decided to give a DNA sample voluntarily that eventually connected him to the unsolved murders. Schiffer initially confessed before withdrawing his testimony, claiming he was sadomasochistic and the thought of being locked up excited him.
Well, good for him. That means he went out with a high. If you're a sadist and a masochist, and you die electrocuting yourself, that's the ultimate way to go out.
Moving along. This one caught my eye because I could kind of relate to it. I've never seen things get this out of hand, but a suburban Seattle mother has been charged with felony assault following an attack last year on a 6th grade girl at a basketball game between 2 Catholic schools. Authorities say 38-year-old Monique Altheimer of Kent got onto the basketball court during a December game in Seattle and choked the child who had fought with the suspect's daughter during an aggressive ball game. Investigators say Altheimer was cursing at the victim as she strangled her, and she elbowed another 11-year-old girl trying to help her teammate.
I mean, it's not enough just to beat up one child. You have to beat up multiple children.
Can you imagine being at a kid's basketball game where the mother runs out onto the court, like gets in full mount on the kid and starts strangling the kid and swearing at her?
There's no way this mother weighs less than 200 pounds.
11-year-olds aren't necessarily that large.
Yeah, but there's no way this mom is small. She's a big fat chick. You just know it. She's got big fat Monique, and she's beating up children at basketball games. That screams self-control issues.
The victim was starting to black out when her own mother appeared to knock Altheimer down to stop the attack. Charging documents filed last week note that Altheimer had been previously convicted of assault. Altheimer declined to comment when reached by phone on Wednesday.
Yeah, because she was beating another child at the time and couldn't come to the phone.
Could be. And finally, we have a dispute between Rhode Island landowners over a load of chicken manure that ruined a wedding. This has apparently been settled. An attorney on Monday said a settlement was being finalized, avoiding a trial that had been set to begin on Tuesday. This guy, Gerald Zarella, filed a lawsuit claiming his neighbors James and Diane Lynch dumped chicken manure near his estate hours before a wedding. He claimed the Lynches were angry he had hosted events on the 32-acre property known as Gerald's Farm. A judge ordered the Lynches to remove the manure.
Sounds like a chicken shit decision.
So Sorella says hundreds of turkeys appeared near his property before the next wedding he hosted. He's pursuing town permits in response to a court ruling that he couldn't host commercial events on his estate. The Lynches haven't responded to a request for comment.
This country's going to the birds.
Oof. You're trying too hard.
I know. I got nothing. I peaked earlier.
That was a low peak. Yeah. But yeah, I like that. It reminded me of your buddy there, Rand Paul, fighting with his neighbor on the lawnmower. Like, why are you dumping all this chicken shit next to your neighbor's house just to piss him off? Like, grow up.
Sounds to me like someone doesn't have chickens.
I don't.
If you did, you'd understand the joy of dumping chick shit on people
during their wedding.
Yeah, it's a hell of a feeling.
Yeah, I've never felt that.
You must try it. It's to die for.
Okay. Anything else going on in your
world? Not a thing.
Anything nope. coming up on halfguarded.com?
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
No. Okay.
Site's closing down. We're done.
Oh, okay. Good to know. That's a relief.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com, iTunes, Google Play, like Spotify, everywhere now. We should be back next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.